Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea. This is the Cuckoo's Nest Broadcasting System presenting the Jerry Roach Show. We are again with Casey Royer. Casey Royer is one of the founders of punk rock, of West Coast hardcore, a father of punk rock, and one of my favorite tunes that I play all the time is Johnny's Got a Problem, and here it is, written by Casey Royer and sang by Casey Royer with his band The D.I. Here it is. Johnny's Got a Problem. He's out of control. Got static on the brain.
Johnny's got a problem and he's out of control. Johnny's got a problem and he's out of control now. Johnny's got a problem and he's out of control. Johnny's got a problem, he's out of control. Chippin', chippin' on down the line. Doesn't really matter who you take with you, just as long as Johnny feels fine. 'Cause we used to look up to you. Johnny's got a problem. He's out of control, he's got static on the brain. Out of control, Johnny's got a problem and he's out of control. He's got static on the brain.
Got static on the brain. I love that line. Anyway, here we are. Casey's in the studio. Hi, Casey.
Hey, what's going on, Jerry? How you been, man?
Good, good. Good to see you again. Casey was in Urban Struggle, the Battle of the Cuckoo's Nest, of course, and in Clockwork Orange County.
Yeah, the new movie you're making. That's pretty cool. I saw, you know, we saw it, and it was killer. You know, I guess, what did they do? Where was that place? Up in Hollywood on the Sunset Strip where had the premiere
up
there?
Oh, yeah. Film festival, yeah.
Got to hang out with Henry Rollins. You know, funny story.
Oh, right. I remember.
Remember that one when he said he was scared of us in the crowd, and we were scared of him on the stage? But we are all, you know, tearing your club apart. It was pretty reckless.
Yeah, Henry said some nice things in his interview. Oh, I should say I have two guests today. I've got a new dog, and he's in the studio. So if you hear anybody whining, it's the dog, not Casey. So what's happening, Casey?
it's kind of hot in here, you know, and I've got, you know, go to the bathroom. I cut myself. I got a pimple. I got some zit. No, that's me whining. No, I'm kidding. No, life is good, Jerry. Just rocking with D.I. and just carrying the punk rock torch still ever since we started it when you helped us facilitate the whole party back in the day.
It seems like yesterday, doesn't it? It's
absolutely. It's just amazing. The memories are so vivid of all the occurrences, you know, the situations at the Cuckoo's Nest, you know, just so great. So
well,
awesome.
You've had a long, long career, and you started off with the Social Distortion and, of course, the Adolescents. And Casey co-wrote Amoeba, another... probably with the biggest song from that era, really.
Yeah, I think so. It's pretty good song.
Oh, there he is.
Thanks,
is that
Jerry.
You, Casey? No. Okay, why don't we play Amoeba, speaking of that, as long as we got to get that out of the way sooner or later.
Great tune, dude. Just, we still play it in the DI set, and it's it's just going to be timeless. It's one of those timeless songs.
It really is. It was a natural. And you co-wrote that with...
Me and Rick wrote it.
Rick Agnew.
And Tom Corvin, our old singer of Social Distortion, helped get the concept together right before Mike and I split up and I went to the adolescence situation. It's a history lesson. I could go on and on. But yeah, it is all good. And adolescence, Amoeba, loving it.
In our lab, looking through the microscope, the little glass sides, they never lie. How can this fall my code? I've never seen anything like it before. This amoeba's got a mind of its own. But don't turn your back to stupid science world. This is reaching for the telephone. It's alive. You're better off dead if you only knew your growing life's taking a dive. I've never seen anything like it before. This amoeba's got a mind of its own. But don't turn away, you stupid science world. This is reaching for the telephone.
Back from the past, a blast from the past, ladies and gentlemen. That's right.
And the DI is one of my favorite bands now too, and you guys are still going strong. Didn't you play with Dee Dee Ramone before he died?
Yeah, actually, this is about, you know, how years ago I guess now, but I was at the Shack in Anaheim, run by Joe Schultz. Great man, great club. And Dee Dee was playing up, and Dee Dee was playing there, so we all went down there, the crew, and I hit Dee Dee up. I'm all, let me sing a song. And he said, here, we'll sing the rest of the set. I don't really like singing, quote unquote, I swear. And, you know, and he was happy, and I went up there, and being, you know, an Orange County guy, everybody in the crowd just saw me hop up there, and I was stoked, you know what I mean? I love the Ramones, one of the best bands ever, probably number one, pretty much. And I got up there, and we started singing Tonight, you know, off the Road to Ruin record, and we just busted into Sheena as a punk rocker, and we were just rolling with it, and it was a very electric evening. And and after the show, I went back to talk to Dee Dee backstage, and he was sitting by himself on a little chair in the backstage at the Shack, and his roadie said, Dee Dee wants to be alone for a little bit before, you know, to unwind. And I said, Dee Dee, we should work on a project. Next week, Dee Dee's dead.
Oh, man.
He OD'd on some bad drugs or whatever happened. We miss him. Great man, great musician. And that's just the way it goes. His name was Doug.
Yeah, they're all dead. Well, not all of them, but yeah. the three guys.
I guess Marky's still kicking. We toured with the Misfits once, D.I., and Marky Ramone playing drums.
Oh, really?
And I guess Richie Ramone's still alive. You know, he was on the, I think the Mondo Bizarro recordings, or they did Time Will Come Again, great video with Richie on drums.
Oh, yeah, and Dan Root's playing with C.J. Ramone, so there are nice. Ramones everywhere, but yeah. the three main guys.
Totally, lots of kids, illegitimate Ramone children everywhere, right? That's punk. That's punk, you know?
Hey, let's play something by them. What do you want to play by the Ramones?
Ramones? One of my favorite songs by the Ramones would probably be Beat on the Brat with a Baseball Bat.
Okay.
It's such a cool tune.
Here it is.
Beat on the Brat. Beat on the Brat with a Baseball Bat. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, ho. Beat on the Brat, beat on the Brat, beat on the Brat with a baseball bat. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh ho. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh ho.
Oh, speaking of the Ramones, I found an old ticket from when they played, and I put it on Facebook, and it said $9.
No way. Yeah. $9 to see the Ramones at the Cuckoo's Nest. And I'm sure I was there, dude.
I was ripping them off for $9.
I know. But man, that band is just timeless. You know, their songs, their attitude, just so cool. I mean, they just busted out. And that's weird. They were created by created like kind of like a television show for punk rock. You know, they were on Sha Na Na once.
Really?
Yeah, they played Rock and Roll High School. And Bruce Springsteen wrote Rock and Roll High School for the Ramones, and it ruined my life when I found that out. The Boss is cool, I guess, you know. I don't know.
I remember that movie. My wife and I went to see it. It was only playing in one screen up in Orange. So we went from Laguna all the way up to Orange, and we said, you know, what ticket do you want? We went to Rock and Roll High School. Went, really? Like, they were surprised. We were the only people in there.
Oh,
I don't think it was a big success.
Classic movie, Rock and Roll High School. Riff Randall, rock and roller.
But it will live forever, that movie. They'll show that on TV for 100 years, like Spinal Tap.
Oh, it's so good. Spinal Tap. You know, the Ramones, when they're riding in that Gabba Gabba Hey pink 62 Cadillac down Hollywood Boulevard. Just, it was awesome. Joey's got the chicken in his hand. He's, you know, eating chicken. They're just awesome. Awesome dudes.
Yeah, but those were the days.
They must have had some bad water or something, Jerry. Bad pizza. I don't know what happened to those guys. They all dropped,
dropped
shooting
like
clay.
Flies. Yeah.
Man, dropped one, like flies. And, you know,
one, two, three.
Wow. See you guys up there in rock and roll heaven. Lou Reed passed away. Kind of sad about that one.
Yeah, too. He was looking pretty bad, though.
Yeah, 71. That's a long, rich, pretty rich year. He probably really consumed a lot of amazing things, you know.
Oh, Lou.
Lou Reed, rock and rolling, you know. Take a Walk on the Wild Side. And the color girl said,
and that great, to What's a Sweet Jane?
Oh, gosh, Sweet Jane. You know what? We played that song. Me and Mike Ness back in Social Distortion played that one song, Sweet Jane.
Really? Because
it was easy. You know, dun, 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 you know, just an easy guitar riff. And, you know, Lou Reed was just right there in that package of punk rock collection. You know, you had your Black Flag, Circle Jerks, Lou Reed, Dickies,
Speaking of,
Damned.
Social D, I remember one time the Adolescents were playing, and I think you were playing with them. I'm sure you were. And Tony goes, well, we're going to have our friends come up and play us. I went, what? And these, up and they used the instruments and just kind of, it was Social Distortion.
Oh,
and they played They played Louie Louie.
That is so classic.
And I'm sure it was their first gig in public. And I mean, you know, in a real bar. I mean,
I think that's when I branched off from Mike and then started playing with the Adolescents. And Mike and Dennis reformed.
Yeah.
And they just played like with the new reforms, you know, Social Distortion has been through a few phases. But yeah, I remember that. Like Tony just bro down and said, okay, come up and get our instruments.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, what? Band change? What's going on?
Yeah, wait a minute. I booked the bands here, Tony.
I know. He was such an anarchist. Tony Adolescent, man. God, man. I remember him hitting himself in the head with bottles trying to go to sleep because he couldn't sleep, you know?
Oh, God.
We're all, dude, don't. You know, that
really?
Song, that song, he was a tormented youth for sure, you know, because he had a bunch of a big family, and my dad apparently wasn't in the mix at that time, and he had four or five brothers and sisters younger than him, and he was 15, and his mom would make him take care of him, and it was just kind of a tormenting situation for him, you know, and wrote that song, I Hate Children, about his, you know, about his younger brothers and sisters, but, you know, that's just, you know, water under the bridge. He loves his family now,
yeah.
And you know, I don't even think he plays that song anymore, because, you know, he don't really hate children, you know what I mean? He's, you know, a little more in line as an adult, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, the Adolescent shows were always off the hook at the Cuckoo's Nest, man. God, the Vandals, Black Flag.
Who wrote Kids of the Black Hole?
Rick Agnew wrote that song.
Oh, yeah.
Tony, I'm sure Tony, you know, helped write some of the vocals, you know, because he was living that black hole experience, which was just an apartment where Mike Ness lived next to his mother and his sister and his brother's apartments. So Mike had his own apartment. He was getting a little older, and we kind of, habitated the black hole, all the, you know, the kids in the bands at that time, and kind of just, you know, we're self-destructive, drinking beers, spray painting, following the footsteps of, you know, punk rock, destroy everything philosophies. And, you know, we existed flying under the radar in the upper middle class Orange County. Our parents weren't really paying attention to us, so we just got kind of away with murder, you know what I mean? Just going to practice areas and clubs like yours and just running amok and then getting home in time to go to school and sneaking in the house. And eventually that all ended and we all moved out, you know. But
I remember one night when the Adolescents played and it was just jam-packed and couldn't have got another person in there, I don't think. And they're getting ready to pay Amoeba, but Tony's introducing the song and he's going, something always happens when we play this.
Yeah.
And they go into Amoeba and the whole place went, you know, was slamming. The whole, not just the dance floor, but by the pool tables, front of the bar, the whole place went. And it was the only time in the whole history of the Cuckoo's Nest that that happened.
Nice. Yeah, out of control.
It was
frenzy.
Like a gas fire, just everywhere they were going. It was
such
like,
comedy, you know, just jumping on pool tables. It must.
It was.
That was good
wild,
times.
Wild.
That was the biggest time. Oh, thanks for that, Jerry. I'll have that memory in my head lodged in, you know, until I get Alzheimer's, of course. You know, about the wildest song ever played at the Cuckoo's Nest. Thank you for that memory. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was. I never thought of it in those terms, but yeah, you're right. It was the only time the whole place went.
Yeah, that's cool because it was just so comedy back in the day because, you know, because society and our parents and no one really knew what was brewing, what this new movement was at all. I'm, you know, you're aware because you pretty much lived it. And it was just so funny. It was just a big joke and it was just so serious to the society. What we were just going crazy laughing at their misunderstanding of what we were trying to put across. And it made it even funnier. It made us go wilder. You know, it was pretty cool.
Casey and I were talking earlier, and he said one of his favorite movies was Spinal Tap, and Spinal Tap played at Radio City, another bar of mine, and they came in character, but I found out that they were a joke band. But anyway, we were talking about Stonehenge and that stuff and Spinal Tap, and And well, go ahead, Casey.
Spinal Tap is one of the most awesome things ever created. Notice my English accent when I start describing them, even. It's so powerful. Such a powerful entity, like from the Druids to the Phoenicians, even to David St. Hubbins and, Nigel Tufnel. They all have the exact same sensation, the feeling of energies from the Druids all the way through Stonehenge to Salem, Massachusetts, where they call it the American Stonehenge, a line drawn from gods of who knows where.
But
yeah, I like, yeah, Spinal Tap kicks ass.
But the fact is that the DI, someone wrote DI.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, check it out. Dave Teagues of the Dickies, good friends of ours, right? We've been playing forever, just shows, right? Dave says, somebody spray painted DI on Stonehenge, right? And it was obviously a DI on Stonehenge because we got friends and fans or whatever out there. And I'm all, wow, that's pretty cool and stuff. And then, so somebody else saw it spray painted recently and then sent in a picture of it and stuff, and just was kind of tripping out on it. And we wrote a song called Aringzo on an album, Ancient Artifacts, I think in 1986, that kind of talked about the Druids and the Phoenicians coming to America. And this hasn't been proven in 30 years. This is a brand new historic breakthrough. They realized from outer space, sorry about that, there's the English drool, from outer space, where the Druids were in the Middle East, draws a straight line through the uprights of Stonehenge, through the Atlantic Ocean, through the uprights of the American Stonehenge in Salem, Massachusetts, and the line runs down through California, and I think maybe the Cuckoo's Nest was the end of the line for the Phoenicians traveling, because that's, actually they did find Phoenician artifacts in Salem, Massachusetts, following that strange astrological line called
that's amazing.
Space.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so it's kind of weird. I just had to bring that up because that Ancient Artifacts album that we put out with a song called Aringzo predicted that fact, and they just discovered it. So it's kind of like tripping us out because we think maybe Rick Agnew's a god, maybe, or a prophet, or something like that. Rick Agnew, Adolescence, is a good friend. Good
yeah, guy. We got to get him in here too. He was in the movie, but we want to get him on the radio show too.
Clockwork Orange County, great movie. Available on Amazon.com, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it still is, and it's selling well.
That sounds like a commercial, huh? Clockwork Orange County, Jerry Roach, Cuckoo's Nest Story, available on Amazon.com.
For all you people in Japan, you can get it over the internet.
Well, we all feared. Clockwork Orange County, Amazon.com, konnichiwa. Arigato.
Speaking of Stonehenge, I remember, like I said, Spinal Tap came and played at my bar. And they didn't tell me. They were just, in character and trying to get the feel.
Or were they in character? Were they just acting as musicians better than a real musician could act?
Well, no, they all knew how to play.
They're awesome.
But,
really good music. Yeah,
but they
yeah.
had, spandex wigs. And
So wrong.
But the audience never knew that they were,
Big
bottom
woman. Hellhole. My goodness. And the energy of Stonehenge. Just where the Druids, Stonehenge, where the demons dwell and the gypsies live. And they dance to the pipes of Pan. It's just an energy. It's an energy.
We got to play Stonehenge now.
We should bring
now.
That energy to us right now, Jerry. That Spinal Tap, just surreal, super Druid Phoenician energy. What do you say?
All right, let's play it.
All right.
Stonehenge
by Spinal Tap.
Hundreds of years before the dawn of history lived a strange race of people, the Druids. No one knows who they were or what they were doing. Hewn into the living rock of Stonehenge, where the demons dwell, where the banshees live and they do live well. Stonehenge, the pipes of Pan.
and the cats meow. I will take you there, I will show you.
Anyway, the what's happening with the DI lately?
DI is just we're just doing really well. We have a new record label called HandGrenadeRecords.com. We're selling our merchandise on that little shopping deal that you could buy stuff for the first time in our lives. And we have a new 4-song EP out that is just blistering good. Hypocristian, World at War, Surf Punks in the USA, and Society's Out of Control, a 4-song, available on 7-inch vinyl.
Cool.
And we just got our rights back from the Cottonmouth Kings dudes for the On the Western Front CD that we're going to be re-releasing. And we're playing a show at the Misfits and the Dickies, just like we did years ago in Hollywood, Sunset Strip, House of Blues.
When's that?
That one's in not until November 15th in Hollywood on Friday, and November 16th at the Observatory Saturday night on the next night on the 16th.
Are the
yeah, it's a Dickies, Misfits, and DI. It's gonna be a really killer show.
The same show is gonna be down here at the Observatory.
Yeah, both places, yeah. LA and here. You gotta go with us, Jerry. Time travel with us. You know, Eddie Tatter, our bass player, plays bass for the Dickies. And whenever we play with the Dickies, Dave Teagues of the Dickies plays second guitar for DI. So it's going to be a really great, great two shows. It's going to be a blast. I have a great time playing these shows because it wasn't like we were fans of our own sound, of our own music. So it's kind of like going out for fun still. My favorite Dickie song, hands down, Rosemary.
Rosemary.
Such a cool tune. Rosemary.
Okay.
Call now, Collector Direct.
Tom is looking for it. And here it is, Rosemary by the Dickies.
Kisses galore, and I think the whole world of her. Rosemary, Rosemary, she's a girl that I adore. She's Rosemary, and I'm going out with her now. Most of the guys give her lots of talk, they wanna walk with Rosemary. But with all the words, they look more absurd like getting after Rosemary. Rosemary, I wanna tell the world who I'm dreaming of, but it's Rosemary.
That was Rosemary. We're sitting here with Casey Royer from the DI, formerly of the Adolescents and Social Distortion. Speaking of Social Distortion, you actually started out with those guys, right? Before you went to the Adolescents?
Yeah, the fuse was lit in my bedroom at my parents' house in like 1976 when me and Mike Ness started just practicing. I was playing drums, he was playing guitar, and we just... you know, it was the beginning. The Sex Pistols record first came out. The Damned put out the very first single that came out. And the Ramones kind of came out in 75.
Right? What's that? Was that New Rose?
Yeah, New Rose. It was New Rose and Neat, 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 I think, on a single. And we were just, adhering to it. And it was fun to play because we could play kind of sloppy and distortion-y, you know. That's where I got the name. Social Distortion was the distortion pedals we used.
Oh, was your idea?
Yeah, I made up the name. I was taking a sociology class. When the definition of sociology is just the interaction of culture. So I just threw that into the mix of punk rock happening. And then we played through distortion pedals, a big muff. So I thought social distortion, because the sound was distorted and the world is distorted. You know, so society was distorted, you know.
Well, I don't think the world knew that. Casey Royer made up the name social distortion.
Yeah, that's trippy, huh? But me and Mike Ness were best friends, you know, just partners and having fun, you know, like rock and roll. We were into Zeppelin and some Aerosmith and Motorhead and some really, you know, some of the rock stuff. And then punk kind of came into the situation and changed actually the whole musical genre of everyone's, what people were able to listen to. There was no punk before that. It was just rock. And then the punk came in. So we it was funny, early SD, we played Sex Pistols, Anarchy in the UK. And then we played Ain't Talking About Love by Van Halen, you know, and something like that. And then Suffragette City by Bowie, and then like a Beat on the Brat with a Baseball Bat by the Ramones, you know, just a mixed up set. So yeah, we wrote like some of Mommy's Little Monster in my bedroom at my parents' house before Mike and I split off and I, you know, went with the Adolescents. But Mommy's Little Monster and some of those tunes, you know, were like created in the simplest fashion back in the day.
Hey, why don't we play that? I haven't heard that for a while. Mommy's Little Monster. Here it is.
Yeah.
That was fun. Anyway, how about the DI?
Just DI.
It's not the DI.
It's just DI.
Yeah. I love that little logo of yours, that little dog.
Yeah, that creature's a trip. I can't believe it. And we lost it. My bass player lost it. We should try to find it on the radio. The
Where'd
lost
you say
pup.
You found it?
We found it at the Anaheim Swap Meet, just on Lemon Street. You know, Lemon and Ornsthorpe in Anaheim. And it was just on a blanket, you know, with a grinder here, a Makita, you know, Makita drill here, little button there. And the button had that on that. Huh. And now we're all, wow, let's just take that. Just give it to this girl. And she drew the very first little teacup guy, the skeleton guy for Mike Ness. We got to tell this story. This story is a good one.
Oh, that's a cool skeleton.
She drew the Mike Ness when me and Mike were kind of going different directions because I was happy and he was kind of angry. So it was easy just to not hang around him. You know, we didn't have any bands together that were anything solid, right? So I went with Fred. And so this girl took the button and drew me the first DI album cover because she was an artist and drew that thing for Mike Ness, that little teacup, like Grateful Dead looking skeleton guy.
Yeah.
And gave him that one. And then she's all, guys, good luck to you. We love you all both. It's just all good, you know. And so those two drawings by a girl named Diane McAleer, Tim Mag's girlfriend, drew that. And now it's tattooed on millions.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You know, between like the social distortion thing and the DI
right.
pup.
Yeah, yeah.
God, there's probably a million kids with that on them.
Skeletons just, always work too.
Yeah, totally. From my bedroom, right, making up the band, to a million tattoos. Now that's a leap into the odd side.
It's pretty tame now compared to the old days, huh?
Totally. They attack with weakness. You know?
Well, you know, it's not like there's no more unknown. Everybody kind of knows what's going to happen. There's no more fear.
Yeah, and the securities have just clamped down so much you can't even do anything. It's not even like halfway scary like it was.
I think part of the fear is the unknown because you didn't know what was going to happen, but now you know what's going to happen. Everything's already been worked out.
So diluted. It's just like it's goofy now.
But it used to be at the Cougar's Nest, every night was different. You never knew what was going to happen because they were all so excited about breaking the molds and doing different things that no one ever did. You know, there were no more rules. You could do whatever you wanted.
Yeah. And there's nobody, you know, bummed if you were drinking beer. You could just
eventually
kinda, like,
it got codified and then you have this kind of punk, that kind of punk, and everybody's got the uniform. But in the beginning, it was just everybody was different. Everybody was experimenting on their own thing.
Yeah, remember there was some face painting going on. Remember there was checkerboard faces, and remember the checkerboard face dude. And there was a Michael X had the X shaved in his head, and the Vandals guys lived in Huntington, so they were dressed like Adam Ant from Hell. You know what I mean? Evil Adam Ants. You know, and they just full Indian war paint and bandana. You know, those Pendletons tied around their waists and kicking every mailbox to the ground on their way to your show.
You say you've never been to Japan, right? With the band?
No, never been to Japan. We've been all over Western Europe and, you know, been all over through, you know, say, you know, Denmark, Sweden, and up in that portion of the zone, and, you know, through Mexico and Canada and all over, but we've never really gotten to Tokyo.
Oh, you played
Tokyo,
Mexico? Go-go. What was that like? They're punks in Mexico?
Mexico? Oh, yeah. Punks are gnarly in Mexico. They punch you in the pit. Like, while you're running, they're fisting you.
Really?
In the back of your head, in your back. And you just, like, run faster. It just was really weird. It was like they had their full-on, you know, they have their own subculture of punk rockers, you know?
Where did you play Mexico?
We played a place called Iguanas back in the day. We played there
Down at the border.
Yeah, at the border about, you know, four or five times.
I remember that.
A collection of a few different clubs in Tijuana that this guy Omar, the promoter's dad, was the sergeant of the Federales. So this kid was throwing bottles at the police cars, and we just couldn't figure out why. You know, we were afraid, right? Because Mexico will take you down, you know? So
really?
Played through Mexico, and it was pretty wild and stuff. You know, pretty good times, you know? Western Europe is a blast. Get through France, Italy, Spain, Germany.
It's a pretty good scene in Germany, isn't there?
Yeah, it's really awesome. Germany is, you know, there's a heavy underground kind of, it's weird. Like Western Europe kind of is able to facilitate kind of a lower middle class existence, where America, there's no room for the lower middle class. You either have to be holding on to the middle class barely, or you're homeless, or you're elite. But over there, it's, I don't know what it is. They figured out, you know, the right way to live, and no one really drives cars, so they kind of use the subway systems and have their own subculture that makes the numbers of fans for music double. There's more places, there's no curfews, there's no guns.
There's a lot of people over there. I mean, there's 90 million in Germany.
It's amazing.
And then you have, you know, yeah, a lot of people. More. I think they have probably more people than we do.
It's packed. It is
and
packed
in a much smaller area.
Oh yeah, you drive across the U.S. and you're like, there's corn and stuff and all kinds of, you know, rolling hills everywhere. Europe's got some of that too, but it's pretty congested in most of the cities.
I drove all the way across France in one day one time, and it's like small 440 miles, I think, from Paris to Biarritz.
So weird. I know, it's very, it's like not too, all the countries aren't really that far apart, you know. Yeah. It's like Texas is bigger than, you know, Italy. It's just what?
And they've gotten rid of the borders over there too, so it's becoming one place. But well, they still have the language differences, but
yeah, it's kind of weird. It's kind of a hodgepodge of everything nowadays. Everything is kind of mixing up. America's the, you know, main language all over, and everyone kind of understands a little bit. Un peu français, oui, stuff like that, right?
Did you run into any good bands that opened for you? Or?
One time, let's see. I got a flyer with us headlining over the Offspring once. No, that's, you know, just, you know, kind of a weird thing. We played with Scream, Dave Grohl's band, you know, from Nirvana, in Switzerland, and played with DOA in Hanover in Germany once. That was quite an excellent show. And, you know, just pretty much in our punk genre, you know what I mean? It's pretty much everybody that everyone's got all the records for, you know, play with GBH in Paris or something like that. That's pretty much the way, you know, nothing really giant.
You didn't discover any unknown punk bands in the Dieseldorf or something?
Nah, they're all really good. I mean, there's a lot of punk spirit in Western Europe. The kids really are dedicated and they're really political. They're really serious about their music, and it's kind of an avenue for their communication as well as their voicing their opinions on society, and it's a major thing. They take music really, really seriously. A couple times we were confronted on our vocals and the lyrics, because the lyrics are kind of a semi-sexist or kind of, you know, we have a song called Hang Ten in East Berlin, and when we went to the East in 1989 when the wall fell, they thought we wanted to hang 10 Germans in East Berlin. Like, hang 10. And they're fucking you, all these German dudes from the East. Because before the wall fell, the Eastern Germans were way different than the Western. Western was more, you know.
And still are, probably.
Westernized, yeah. And, like, the Eastern ones didn't really know what was going on because there's a big, you know, communication barrier through the language as well as through their cultural, like, separation. So we went over there, like, about 10 Germans just charged us on stage.
Really?
And we thought they were going to just jump us or something. It was a pretty big crowd, right? And I think this was the first time we went over there, and we were just kind of tripping, you know, because we didn't know what to expect. You know, here we go, Southern California kids just all like thrown into the mix in Western European politics, and these Germans charging us. And then one guy walks up, this big guy named Hans. I'm gonna call him Hans. No, that's more Swedish. His name was Adolf. Yeah. Adolf walked up to me, 6'5", looks down at me and goes, and I'm all, what? What's up? How's it going, dude? And he's all, what is this you say you're hanging 10 Germans in East Berlin? And we look at him and we look at each other. We're all, hang 10. It's a surfing term, dude. It's all your, you know, toes, you know, all your toes on the nose of a board, a longboard, right? So it's, you know, hit him up and
toes.
They let us go. They didn't make a schnitzel out of us or grind us up into any kind of sausages.
Well, that's a great intro. We got to play that now. Hang 10 in West Berlin.
Yeah, no, East Berlin.
East Berlin, sorry.
Well, East and West. We hang 10 like anywhere around the Brandenburg Gate's good with me. All right, rock and roll.
Within our reach, it's within our reach. So, hang 10 in East Berlin, hang 10 in East Berlin, hang 10, hang 10 in East Berlin, hang 10 in East Berlin, hang 10 in East Berlin, hang 10, hang 10 in East Berlin. Blubber in the water, gonna kill you, but you can't fight back, boys, that just won't do.
No!
Firing in the line, I'm sure is sweet. So Dachau, Deutschland, gotta keep a beat, keep a beat. So hang 10 in East Berlin, hang 10 in East Berlin, hang 10, hang 10 in East Berlin, hang 10 in East Berlin.
So why don't we play something off the record you just got back, the one you brought with you?
The On the Western Front record that was produced by Ronnie King, and really great producer. He did a Wu-Tang Crew and Mariah Carey and stuff, and you know, he was one of those kind of visionary, kind of Rain Man-ish engineers, so to speak, if you can put that together mentally. But yeah, it's a really good record, On the Western Front. We should probably start off with the title track of On the Western Front. It refers to California being a police state, and it's kind of a money-hungry, self-consuming nightmare of a system. And it kind of throws a lot of ideas about what the system's going to kind of do to you and how they pursue you. And there's a video on YouTube as well, On the Western Front, that we did.
That's a really good video.
Yeah, where the cops beat me up and I'm all bloody and stuff. And then the one guy spit blood in the detective's face because he hits me in the face with a phone book. I mean, it's a pretty cool video. I mean,
that was really well done. I thought that was really, really a good video.
Yeah, we're going to have this available as well on HandGrenadeRecords.com with we got hoodies and shirts and stuff like that too. And yeah, we're going to be like charging On the Western Front again. It's got some great songs. I think it's one of the best recordings. Right after Horse Bites, Dog Cries. And
that's a good title too.
Yeah. We have so many different pieces throughout the history. It's hard to pick which one I like the best, but On the Western Front was really one of the best executed, recorded CDs we've ever done, with Joey Tatter, Eddie Tatter, bass and drums, Clinton Calton on guitar. This DI, we all grew up within a mile of each other, has been together for about 12, 13 years now, and we have really clicked, and we're really doing some impressive shows. So, and this is pretty much a depiction of what we do on this recording we're about to play. Ladies and gentlemen, DI, On the Western Front.
You feel the pressure in this police state. There's no more freedom
on the Western Front.
Your rights are gone in California. We're all suspect
on the Western Front.
You've all been brainwashed, paralyzed, innate. West Coast deception
on the Western Front.
Please see the truth before it's too late. Don't be a victim
on the Western Front.
The jails are full. Can you pay the price? The price of freedom
on the Western Front.
The courts are biased. The money machine of self-destruction
on the Western Front.
Your knowledge is power in this fascist state. Kill or be killed
on the Western Front. Whoa.
But the greedy get in play.
Whoa.
And our lives run away.
Whoa.
Another victim of the state.
Whoa.
It really makes me want to hate.
That's a good record, and it's being re-released, right?
Well, yeah, we're taking it under our own wing to manufacture it ourselves, and just do it yourself kind of scenario, because it seems like a lot of businesses are able to do that, whether small or large, it's like got to do it yourself to cut out that middleman, because the middleman seems to be just like another slice out of the pie. And now through the Facebook and the networking and stuff, it works out really well, and we're just like trying to pass the words of humanitarianism and vegetarianism. Forget that one.
Be sure and listen to part 2 next week of the Casey Royer interview.